Genesis chapter 22. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, "Abraham." And he said, "Here am I." He said, "Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you." So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Then Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you." And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac, his son. And he took it in his hand the fire and the knife. So they went, both of them together. And Isaac said to his father Abraham, "My father." And he said, "Here I am, I, my son." And he said, "Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham said, "God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." So they went, both of them together. And when they came to the place of which the Lord had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. And Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." And he said, "Here am I." He said, "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of that place, "The Lord will provide." As it is said to this day, "On the mount of the Lord it shall be provided." And the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, "By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this and not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you. And I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven and as the sand that is on the seashore. And your offspring shall possess the gate of his enemies, and in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice." So Abraham returned to his young men, and they arose and went together to Beersheba. And Abraham lived at Beersheba. That is the word of the Lord for us this morning. Listen, as we begin, I want to acknowledge that to many people, this is a really disturbing passage to read. If you do not know much about God or much about Christianity, and this is the place that you picked up and opened up in your Bible, this makes for disturbing reading. Indeed, it's the reason why many people who question the validity of Christianity say your God is as bloodthirsty and cruel as the tribal deities of old who revel in the gory practices of child sacrifice. So if you or someone you know think this about God, especially as it relates to child sacrifice in the story of Abraham and Isaac, I want to say two things. Firstly, I sympathize with your concerns. I sympathize with you. I too abhor the evident practice of child sacrifice in the ancient world, including recent archaeological discoveries in Peru, which reveals this location of a place where about 140 children were sacrificed in religious ceremony. I too find such accounts and such ways of relating to God deeply disturbing. So I sympathize with you if you read the account of Abraham and Isaac this way, as just another deity looking for a child sacrifice to revel in. The second thing I want to say is this: stick with the sermon till the end. Stick with me. And then we'll consider together whether the God of the Bible is really as cruel and as bloodthirsty for the practice of child sacrifice as the tribal deities you may have in mind. So stick with me as we work through this. The first thing, as we're wrestling with the text itself, is that we acknowledge that this event was indeed orchestrated by God. This is not an hallucination or some deep psychosis tormenting the aging mind of Abraham. Verse 1 makes this really clear, that after these things, God tested Abraham. So whatever follows has to be read, seen, and appreciated from this perspective. It is God who is at work. He is testing Abraham for a particular reason and towards a particular goal. That said, it's very hard not to imagine this episode from Abraham and Isaac's perspective, right? They are the main characters having to act out this very event. When you give thought to their side of the story, we feel for them, don't we? Remember, Abraham did not have the benefit of hindsight like we do. We get to see how the story ends. Abraham was not given that much info. It's not like God said to him, "Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and offer him as a burnt offering. And by the way, Abraham, at the very last moment, I'm going to intervene and you won't have to carry through with this." Abraham gets none of that. As far as Abraham was concerned, all he knew is that God had spoken and he was to obey. What else could he do? What else could he do? But again, as we're thinking about this from Abraham and Isaac's perspective, Abraham is not called into a stoic or a dispassionate obedience towards God, right? Had God asked Abraham to sacrifice an animal, perhaps he would have been more dispassionate about that. I mean, after all, Abraham had offered animals and sacrifice before. That would have been fairly routine. The test hits much closer to home. The sacrifice is Isaac, his promised and cherished son, who would carry on the family name and who would be the conduit of the divine blessings promised to Abraham. And now God says for Abraham to kill that child, the beloved through whom the divine blessings are supposed to flow. I'd imagine that would be a pretty difficult pill to swallow if you were Abraham. But the test garners even more intensity than that. If you continue reading, with no hindsight and on his way to slaughter this boy whom he loved, the text reveals that the whole episode is intentionally and unavoidably drawn out. Over the course of 3 days, Abraham has to travel to the spot where this event will unfold. 3 days of thinking that through. 3 days of pondering that whole scenario in your mind. Verses 3 to 4. Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. And they went to the place of which God had told him. And on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. So 3 days, Abraham gets to mull this over. And I'm sure it's been made doubly hard because on the one hand, he knows and remembers that God had said and promised through Isaac, your offspring shall be named. And yet now this same Isaac was to be offered as a burnt offering. How could God be true to his promise if the promise is dead? That's a tense thing to think through, don't you think? I mention these factors which make up the intensity of God testing Abraham because it's important to recognize that this was no walk in the park for Abraham. God was asking of Abraham the one thing that he cherished incomparably to anything else. It was precious to him to have Isaac. So why would God ask such a big thing of an aging man? Why not just let him die in peace? He's an old man at this time, and God says, this one thing that you love has to be offered up. Well, there's much to talk about there. But we do know this, that the test was meant to draw out and display Abraham's full and total commitment to God. So the intensity of the test seems to be designed to show the intensity of Abraham's obedience. Something that a lesser test could not have equally drawn out and displayed as clearly as this one. And it's this devotion to God that we see in Abraham. He resolved to obey what the Lord required of him, even when such devotion would mean profound personal loss. This teaches us a great deal about what mature faith looks like. Mature faith. You see, Abraham, having previously shown us what mature faith does not look like, right? He traded his wife for his personal safety twice and impregnated a surrogate instead of trusting God. So he shows us what it's not. And then in his older age, he shows us what mature faith is. He develops. He matures. In his later years, it is this tremendous maturity in his faith that we love to see. So much so that his mature faith puts God's call on his life above every other commitment and attachment in his life. That is the trajectory of true faith, where you can put God's call above every other commitment or attachment in your life. True faith puts us on this orbital path towards God, where God is central. And the more mature your faith, the more stable your orbit will be around God, and the closer your orbit will be around God. And we see this developing in Abraham. His faith has now matured. Obedience to God has become the central reality, the very thing that grips him most about life. So much so that obedience to God has become the central and primary concern which now governs him. That is a mature faith. The text wants us to see this about Abraham. If you look at verses 3 and then through to 9 and 10, it says, Abraham rose early in the morning, and when they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. He's not pretending. He's not pretending to obey God at this point, right? He's going to do it, as far as he knows. Still, that being true, this doesn't go a long way towards comforting those of us who regards this episode as proof that God revels in child sacrifice. Which is why I want to draw our attention now to the polemic nature of this episode. The whole episode is an argument, essentially, against child sacrifice. Let's think about this. The whole story up to this point has mounted up to this climactic moment where Isaac is bound on the wood and Abraham has got knife in hand, ready to strike. And it's precisely at that intense climactic moment where God intervenes and brings the whole thing to a crashing halt. Notice this. The test has proven what it has been designed for. Abraham is fully and totally committed to his obedience towards God. And with the test concluding, with that point proven, God intervenes and he says, "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." And it's precisely this intervention from God that makes this a polemic story, which makes it a strong argument against the practice of child sacrifice as far as the God of the Bible is concerned. In other words, it's precisely because God stops Abraham from child sacrifice that proves that God is not the cruel and bloodthirsty deity many assume him to be. He is teaching Abraham at this moment that in spite of what he had known, culturally speaking, that many practice child sacrifice, it is teaching Abraham that his God, the God of the Bible, does not relate to people that way. He's different. He's different from the Baals of the pagan world. And with that, with God making this case that child sacrifice is not his mode of operating, not the way that he does things, not what he desires from his people. With that in mind, we are brought ever closer to the depth of the gospel in this story. Because God does in fact tell us more about his mode of operation and what he does desire. It does involve sacrifice. That is true. Christian faith accepts that. Sacrifice is involved. But it is not a sacrifice that we provide. This is a crucial difference between the pagan deities of old and the God of the Bible. The sacrifice that God requires is not one that we provide. In this sense, Abraham was right when he answered Isaac's question. I remember Isaac asked, "Where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" He's oblivious, it seems, right? Where is this lamb? And Abraham says, God will provide for himself the burnt offering, which God did by way of a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. So we are taught this about God. God will indeed provide the sacrifice he requires. And that sets him apart from the pagan deities of old. And the sacrifice God provides drives us into the gospel even deeper. As far as the New Testament is concerned, the episode between Abraham and Isaac prefigures Jesus. It is like a shadow to the reality of Jesus, right? A forerunner, a prototype of the real thing. It's an early illustration of a future sacrifice God would provide. Stick with me. Consider Jesus as parallel to Isaac. What do we know about Isaac? Of Isaac, it is said that he is his father's son, his only son whom he loves. Does this not echo what we know of Jesus and what the Father in heaven says about Jesus when he said, "This is my beloved son with whom I am well pleased"? There is an echo going on in the story between Isaac and Jesus. And still deeper into the gospel we go. Not only is Isaac regarded as the loved son which prefigures Jesus, the drama unfolds at a place called Moriah. You know, in the Bible, the only other reference we have to Moriah is in 2 Chronicles, where it is identified as the place where Solomon builds the temple in Jerusalem. That's remarkable. I do not think it's a coincidence that Isaac is depicted as the prepared yet spared sacrifice in the same area Jesus was the prepared and not spared sacrifice. It is a very peculiar detail to notice in the Bible. So again, there is an echo between Jesus and Isaac here. There are numerous other parallels that we could pick up on between Isaac and Jesus. Both Jesus and Isaac had miraculous births. Both were silent before their executioners. Isaac looked for a sacrificial lamb, and Jesus is specifically identified as the sacrificial lamb who is slain to atone for the sins of others. All this is to say is that surely Genesis chapter 22 is designed not only as a polemic against child sacrifice and to commend Abraham's faith, but also to bring us to Jesus. For it is in Jesus that we see the true and better Isaac, the true son, the only son whom the Father truly loves and yet does not spare in order to bring about our salvation. Because in not sparing Jesus, Jesus shoulders the burden of sin in perfect obedience to his Father. As it is said of Jesus, God did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all. And elsewhere it says, God gave up his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. And listen finally to these words of Isaiah, who tells us about the mission and purpose of Jesus. Surely Jesus has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. and with his stripes we are healed. Genesis chapter 22 is for us an echo of the gospel, a place where God says, I will provide a sacrifice. It's not one that you have to provide, it is one that God himself will provide. And that sacrifice is Christ.